I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. On Wednesday, all 50 Senate Republicans voted against the Freedom to Vote Act. That's the Democrats' voting rights and election reform legislation that included making Election Day a federal holiday, expanded early and mail-in voting, instituted voter ID, banned partisan gerrymandering, among other provisions. Earlier this year, Republicans blocked similar legislation for the People Act. Both bills would establish federally mandated election rules. It's not clear about the fate of the Freedom to Vote Act. One option is getting rid of the filibuster. Now, this is all happening against a backdrop of former President Trump and Republican state and congressional lawmakers pushing baseless conspiracy theories that falsely allege that the 2020 election was stolen and that our election system is riddled with fraud. Here in Pennsylvania, Senate Republicans want all voter records from the 2020 election, including driver's license numbers and the last four digits of Social Security numbers, as part of what they are calling a forensic investigation. Today on Radio Times, the fight over the right to vote. And joining us by Skype is Ari Berman, senior reporter at Mother Jones, where he covers voting rights, wrote a book called Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. Ari Berman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. Thanks for having me back.
You're very welcome. And Wendy Weiser is with us as well, vice president of the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University School of Law. She founded and directed the program's Voting Rights and Election Project. And Wendy Weiser, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And I want to make sure our listeners can join us because this is such a critical issue. You can send us an email with any questions or comments. That's radiotimes@whyy.org. You can always tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can pick up the phone and give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Well, I do want to talk about what is in the Freedom to Vote Act. And Wendy, if I can quote you, you wrote, the Freedom to Vote Act is historic legislation that would be the most consequential voting rights and anti-corruption bill passed in more than half a century. What makes this bill so critical?
Well, we're really facing a multi-pronged crisis dealing with both voting rights and other major attacks on our democracy. Across the country, we are seeing state legislation pile voting restriction upon voting restriction right now. Already 33 laws in 19 states have been put in place this year alone to make it harder to vote. And it's only part of a broader strategy to attack our election infrastructure. We are seeing attacks on election officials. We are seeing legislation that would try to give partisans authority to control vote counting or even overturn election results. And we are seeing these efforts to try to cast doubt on the legitimacy of our elections to pave the way for other attempts to interfere with the election process. This is a significant crisis that is threatening free and fair elections in America. And Congress needs to step in. And it's not just voting. We're seeing gerrymandering going on across the country. And of course, we've been in now a decades-long growing problem of concentration of political power among a very small group of wealthy donors.
That's a lot. And we will get to each one of those. But Ari Berman, let me get you in on the conversation. This is the third time that Senate Republicans have essentially rejected a voting rights bill. Is there any voting rights bill that you think Republicans and Democrats can agree on?
Not any good voting rights bill, Marty. We've come a long way from the days in 2006 when the Senate voted to reauthorize the Voting Rights Act by a vote of 98-0. I mean, that's astonishing. In 2006, the Senate voted 98-0 to reauthorize the Voting Rights Act. When the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act comes up for a vote next week to restore the Voting Rights Act, it's likely that every single Republican, or maybe every single Republican but one, Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, is going to vote against it. So we have seen a huge shift in the Republican Party away from voting rights. They unanimously oppose the For the People Act, Democrats' first voting rights bill. Then what happened is Joe Manchin negotiated a new voting rights bill, the Freedom to Vote Act, that was explicitly written to try to win Republican support. It kept pro-voter provisions, but it also gave states more flexibility on voter ID laws, more flexibility on voter purging, took out things they didn't like mandatory small donor financing of congressional elections, and still no Republicans supported it. So I think it's very clear that Republicans are not going to support any expansive legislation to make it easier to vote. And why would they? Because as Wendy just described, the Republican Party at the state level is engaged in the greatest effort to roll back voting rights since the Jim Crow era. So why would they support federal legislation that would stop those kind of things from going on when that is where the focus of the Republican Party is now, particularly under Donald Trump?
Well, let me play a clip from this week. This is Republican Senator Mitch McConnell explaining why Republicans voted to block the voting rights bill from moving to debate. Let's give it a listen and then we'll talk about it.
The latest umpteenth iteration is only a compromise in the sense that the left and the far left argued among themselves about exactly how much power to grab and in which areas. This latest bill still subjects popular common sense election integrity protections like voter ID to the whims of federal bureaucrats. It still sends government money to political campaigns. Government money, taxpayers' money to political campaigns. For goodness sake, it still puts Washington in the middle of states' redistricting decisions, and on and on. The same rotten core is all still there.
Wendy Weiser, based on your analysis of what is going on, what do the Republicans want?
You know, I think that they do not want right now, the Republicans in Congress do not want to debate or talk about any voting rights legislation. They have on multiple occasions voted to haven't even supported opening debate and entering into conversation about agreeing on a voting rights bill at a time of extreme crisis across the country. So we haven't heard any affirmative ideas as to how they might want to engage with this legislation because they appear to oppose it in all of its forms. And I will point out the critiques that have been levied against the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act are not critiques of the new legislation. They are critiques of the Voting Rights Act itself, the basic structure of this iconic legislation that has been the most significant engine of voting equality and the most successful civil rights bill in our nation's history. The critiques are levied against that bill's core from its inception.
Ari, let me go to you. And just to make sure our listeners understand about what happened on Wednesday, basically the Republicans voted against debating this particular voting rights bill, correct?
Correct. And that's what's so extraordinary here is we actually haven't even had a debate about voting rights on the Senate floor because they blocked a debate on the For the People Act, and now they've blocked a debate on the Freedom to Vote Act. So people think that this issue has been debated widely in the Senate. It has not. And it's incredible to me that to filibuster this bill, they don't actually have to stand on the floor and filibuster it, right? We used to think of Mr. Smith goes to Washington and Jimmy Stewart has to give this hours and hours and hours long speech where you recite different parts of the Constitution to block bills. Right now, the onus is on the majority party to get 60 votes to break a filibuster, as opposed to being on the minority party to muster 41 votes and to stand there for 24 hours like Strom Thurmond did against the Civil Rights Act to block it. And that's one of the many changes that Democrats want to see to the filibuster. At the very least, they believe that if Republicans are going to filibuster, they should actually have to filibuster.
Well, how do they make them do that?
Just bring back the Senate rules like they used to be. Bring back the Senate rules and say, if you want to block legislation, you have to continuously hold the floor to be able to filibuster. There is a time on how long you can do it. You have to provide 41 senators at all times on the floor to be able to do that. That's the basic amount that we should have. Now, I think a lot of Democrats, including Joe Biden yesterday, suggested we should go much further and very likely exempt voting rights legislation from the filibuster because it's so fundamental to democracy. But at the very least, we should go back to how the Senate used to work, which is you want a filibuster, show up and actually do it.
Well, and you talked about majority and minority parties. I mean, with essentially 50-50, you don't, I mean, you've got the vice president, but nonetheless, you don't really have a majority minority party anymore.
Well, you have a majority minority party in the sense that Democrats are the majority if Kamala Harris breaks the tie. But right. I think the thing that's really extraordinary about the filibuster is if you look at the math, it only takes 41 Republican senators who represent just 21% of the country to block this legislation or any other pieces of legislation. And provisions of the For the People Act are extremely popular. People really like policies like online and election day and automatic registration. They really like early voting. They really like access to mail voting. They really don't like partisan gerrymandering or would like to see it banned. This is stuff that is popular across the board. There was a poll I just saw that 70% of Americans support the Freedom to Vote Act, and some parts of it are supported by 80% of voters, including a majority of Republicans. So you have a situation where 41 senators representing just 21% of the country can block legislation that's supported by a huge majority of Americans that wouldn't just benefit one party, but that would open up voting access for all Americans. I think that's the key point here. When you expand access to the ballot, you're not just doing it to help one party. It benefits every voter nationwide in the states that you're doing it. And so I think the filibuster has really perverted the whole notion of representative government.
Wendy, about a minute or so before our first break here, but from your perspective, if there were filibuster reform, would that help deal with our electoral system and ensuring the right to vote?
Well, as Ari points out, the filibuster is fundamentally regressive in that it allows a minority of senators representing a tiny minority of the public to prevent even opening up debate on really critically important issues that are actually, as he notes, supported by a vast majority of Americans. What we heard yesterday from the president and what we're hearing increasingly from Senate Democrats is that, you know, they are increasingly open to revisiting the filibuster and its application. I think the president said that, you know, there might come a time where it needs to be fundamentally reformed. But there are many ways for the Senate Democrats to bring this legislation to debate short of that, you know, fundamental reform or abolishing the filibuster. They have a lot of procedural options at their disposal for adjusting the application of the filibuster to these legislations. And as Joe Manchin had said, inaction should not be an option on this legislation, given the real critical nature of the issues and how fundamental they are to our entire system of government.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about the fight over the right to vote. That's Wendy Weiser from the Brennan Center, Ari Berman from Mother Jones. Much more after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen. Ari Berman is with us. He's senior reporter at Mother Jones. He covers voting rights. In fact, wrote a book a little while ago called Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. Wendy Weiser with us as well, vice president of the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at the New York University School of Law. You can also join us, Radio Times, at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me play another clip, and this is also from Wednesday. This is Senator Chuck Schumer, and here he is criticizing Senate Republicans after they unanimously voted to block the Freedom to Vote Act from being debated.
Let there be no mistake. Senate Republicans blocking debate today is an implicit endorsement of the horrid new voter suppression and election subversion laws pushed in conservative states across the country. By preventing the Senate from functioning as it was intended, Republicans in this body are permitting states to criminalize giving food and water to voters at the polls. Republicans are saying it's okay to limit polling places and voting hours and shut the door to more expansive vote by mail. I mean, my God, why aren't all of my colleagues outraged by these laws? Frankly, we haven't heard a clear explanation from Republicans at all, because they refused for this chamber to even hold a debate.
Ari, let me go back to you. We talked about the idea of reforming or figuring out ending the filibuster or somehow not applying the filibuster when it comes to things like voting rights. But what other options do the Democrats have to get some of this legislation through?
Well, that is really their best option. You could ask Wendy what other procedural things they could do. But from my vantage point, sooner or later, this fight is going to come down to the filibuster, because there's just no way that you're going to get 60 votes, which means 10 Republican votes for this legislation. You can't do many of the voting things through reconciliation, right? There's no exception for voting in the same way. And so I think there's really no alternative but to ultimately reform the filibuster and say that voting rights legislation should be passed with a simple majority vote, which, by the way, is how states are doing it right now. So when Texas wants to enact a new voter suppression bill or a new extreme gerrymandered map, they are doing it on a party line simple majority vote. But when the Senate wants to protect voting rights, they can't do it on a party line majority vote. So there's an asymmetry here in terms of tactics.
And there's so many Senate rules, Wendy Weiser. How would the Democrats, assuming they can all agree on this, reform the filibuster? And would the Republicans filibuster reform, if you know what I mean?
Well, there are many ways to adjust the application of the filibuster to enable this to get to debate. As Ari points out, there could be an exception carved out for voting rights legislation or for legislation affecting major constitutional issues. As the president pointed out, there could also be, you know, a return to the talking filibuster, which was how it was originally designed. Popular option is coupling such a talking filibuster with a process by which after each successive vote, it requires a smaller and smaller number of votes to get to break debate until finally it goes down to 51 and ultimately the majority prevails. These are some of the many options that that they have in order to do this. And they can do this. There are procedural mechanisms to do this where the rules changed is not subject to a filibuster itself.
But the idea that just making someone, not just, but making someone stand there and defend their position for 12 or 14 or 18 or 24 hours, you think that's enough to change people's minds?
Well, I think that if that's coupled with this step-down vote process, it will actually get there. But, you know, it's also unclear right now whether or not all of the Republicans would be willing to stand there and hold back the line on voting rights to actually maintain a full 41 in perpetuity, holding the line on actually, as Senator Schumer said, actually standing up for and justifying these vote suppression and other election sabotage measures that are being pushed in states across the country, you know, is a heavier lift.
Let me go back to you, Ari, and I can't detail all the provisions that are in the Freedom to Vote Act, but for instance, making Election Day a holiday, ending gerrymandering, expanding voting access through same-day registration and automatic voter registration, things like that. I mean, none of this seems particularly radical when it comes to people's right to vote.
Well, that's the thing that's so interesting about the Freedom to Vote Act. All of the policies have been instituted at the states already. many in Republican-controlled states. Texas has 2 weeks of early voting. Alaska and Iowa have Election Day registration. Lots of states, lots of Republican-controlled states like Florida, have no excuse absentee voting. Utah has universal mail voting. So it's just funny to hear Republicans rail against policies, many of which have already been instituted in their own states. And that's what Senate Democrats did. They looked to the states to see what was working. Then they adopted those policies. And voters really like those policies. If you ask a Republican in Texas, do you like early voting? They like it. If you ask people in Alaska, do you like being automatically registered? They like this kind of thing. Iowa's had Election Day registration for 40 years. It's extremely popular there. The public in general doesn't like gerrymandering. If you ask Republicans, independents, Democrats, should politicians be able to choose their own voters rather than voters choosing their politicians? Overwhelmingly, they say no. And so there's nothing particularly radical about the Freedom to Vote Act. And if this was a debate that happened 20 years ago, it wouldn't be controversial at all. And that's the really unfortunate thing, is that voting rights has become so politicized. And everything is about left versus right, D versus R, as opposed to what works and what doesn't, and what is popular in terms of expanding access to the ballot. And the Freedom to Vote Act was drafted as a compromise bill. So states that have voter ID laws, they can keep their voter ID laws. States that want to remove voters from the rolls, as long as they do it in a legal way, they can keep doing that. At the same time, we're saying there should be a federal guarantee of voting rights in this country, that it's wrong that in some places it's really easy to vote and in some places it's really hard to vote. That's exactly what the Voting Rights Act was trying to stop in 1965, where we had separate and unequal treatment depending on what your race was or depending on where you lived. And we still unfortunately have vestiges of that today, and it's getting worse. And that's why it's so important for Congress to act right now.
And Ari, I do want to play a clip from actually President Johnson going back obviously decades. But what you're saying is, looking at this particular piece of legislation, it sort of provides a kind of uniformity for all states, correct?
Exactly. That's exactly what it does. It has national standards for elections. And that's the same thing that the Voting Rights Act did, is it said that you could not discriminate on the basis of race, no matter where you lived. And that expanded access to the ballot dramatically for historically disenfranchised and marginalized groups. Unfortunately, in recent years, there's been efforts to chip away at the Voting Rights Act and to put in place discriminatory voting measures. And the only way to solve that problem is to have a national solution, so that you can't have a situation where they're expanding voting rights in California, but in Texas, they're closing 750 polling places, or in Georgia, they're criminalizing giving you food and water, or in Florida, they're outlawing mail ballot drop boxes. That is a fundamentally undemocratic thing, that states can make it harder to vote with essentially no federal oversight, especially at a time when the courts have moved in such an extreme direction and are unlikely to strike down many of these efforts.
Let me play a clip. And again, this is following the historic Selma March, 1965. This is then President Lyndon Johnson urging Congress to pass the Voting Rights Act. It was actually signed into law August 6, 1965. Let's give it a listen.
Long-suffering men and women peacefully protested the denial of their rights as Americans. Many were brutally assaulted. One good man, a man of God, was killed. Many of the issues of civil rights are very complex and most difficult. But about this, there can and should be no argument. Every American citizen must have an equal right to vote.
So, Wendy, what happened between 1965 and 2021?
A lot has happened between 1965 and 2021. And for a while, we had a real national consensus that we need to be moving forward on voting rights. And as Ari pointed out, There was a consensus in the Congress. They voted unanimously to reauthorize the Voting Rights Act back in 2006. But there was near unanimity on the Help America Vote Act just 5 years before that. And their Congress previously also passed the motor voter law to open up and expand access to voter registration. Congress has been an engine of advancing voting rights for, since 1965. And we have sharply retreated at a moment when the problem is the most acute that it's been since there. And I do want to note that, this is not taking over election administration from the states. States are still not only in charge of running the elections, but there's a lot of discretion and room for states to expand voting rights even further or to adopt these to their own local practices. These are minimum national standards that every American can rely on so that voting rights are not going to be a tool for manipulating the electoral process and that Americans can't be excluded based on these political and otherwise exclusive vote suppression tactics.
All right, here's a tweet from Jonathan. He says, this is more important than the Build Back Better bill than used to be nonpartisan. One of the things I read is that, Congress are trying to figure out how to pass the Build Back Better, infrastructure, climate issues, and voting. I don't like to necessarily prioritize things, but, is this the top issue, you think?
No. I mean, it very clearly is not the top issue for the Congress or the president. They have prioritized economic legislation over voting rights legislation. They have either prioritized things that they can do with a simple majority vote, like reconciliation, or things that they can get bipartisan support on, like infrastructure. And I understand that. Politics is the art of the possible. At the same time, the threats to our democracy are so urgent, and they're getting worse at such a rapid pace, they demand immediate action. Right now, we are seeing extreme gerrymandered maps be passed all across the country, in Texas, in red states, in Illinois, in blue states. It's happening right now. And if we don't ban that immediately, those maps are going to be in place for a decade. And people are going to live under a literally rigged system in those states for a decade. We're running out of time to institute these pro-voter policies before 2022. So that means that voters in places like Georgia and Texas are going to have to vote under situations that are very different than what they voted under in 2020. And so I understand the importance of the economic legislation. I would argue the threats to our democracy are more urgent than those problems and demand a more immediate solution to those problems. And so I understand what the White House is doing, what the Congress is doing. But if we don't have free and fair elections, nothing else matters. Doesn't matter if we build a bunch of roads and bridges and then we don't have representative government anymore and the party of insurrection takes over and rigs future elections and tries to actually overturn them, which is where this is headed if you follow what's happening in the Republican Party under Donald Trump. So this is a threat to democracy that can't wait any longer. Democrats should have passed this legislation in the spring, should have passed it in the summer. Now it's already October. And we're getting closer to passing it, but we're still a long way from getting there. And meanwhile, every single day the Congress doesn't act, a new gerrymandered map, a new voter suppression law, a new election subversion law becomes law.
And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Wendy Weiser, I ran across a quote from Charles Blow. I just wanted to read it and get your reaction. And it's titled Last Chance to Save Democracy. This is talking about this voting bill. He wrote, Republicans around the country have taken the distrust Trump has created and woven it into policy. They are using the lie that the electoral system was rigged to literally rig the electoral system. You think he's onto something there?
Unfortunately, that is the sad truth. The disinformation, the big lie about voter fraud, about the rigging the 2020 election, it is being leveraged to push vote suppression legislation across the country. It is being leveraged to press for actual takeover legislation that would allow partisans to change vote counts. It is being leveraged to attack and take down nonpartisan, neutral election administrators who are necessary, the engine of actually running the electoral system and making sure that every vote is cast and counted fairly. It is, and the disinformation is being used to promote further propaganda. There are these partisan election reviews going on in many states across the country. Pennsylvania is one of the states that have fallen victim to this, that are being used as engines of further disinformation about the election to drum up these justifications to further tilt and distort the democratic system. And I fear, as Ari said, that we do not have very much time. Not just are these efforts being rapidly put into law, and not only is an election coming up very rapidly, but once these takeovers are complete, it will be a lot more work to actually try to restore fair representative democracy and fair elections if we go down that path.
Well, I'll tell you what, we have to take a very short break, and I do want to get back to our conversation. I'll just read a couple of comments here. One from LP, who says, let's stop pretending we live in a democracy. A comment from Harry. Some people say that what has changed is politics, but it's not about a change in politics. The Republican Party has changed, not the Democratic Party. Well, we're going to take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation with Ari Berman, senior reporter at Mother Jones. He covers voting rights. Also with us is Wendy Weiser, vice president of the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University School of Law. I do want to talk about Pennsylvania after this very short break. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen, and if you are just joining us, we're talking about the fight over the right to vote, whether it's happening in the U.S. Congress or whether it's happening at the state level. And again, our guests are Wendy Weiser. She is vice president of the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice, that's at NYU School of Law. Ari Berman is with us as well. He's a senior reporter at Mother Jones. He covers voting rights, wrote a book called Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. And again, we want to hear from you. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and of course you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Any questions or comments? Well, I do want to talk about Pennsylvania. Senate Republicans in this state have called for a quote-unquote forensic investigation of the 2020 election. They want voter information, things like driver's license numbers. They want the last four digits of voters' social security numbers. And there is some pushback coming from Attorney General Josh Shapiro and others, concerns about voter privacy rights. And Ari, if I can just get a quick response from you, what's happening in Pennsylvania? Is there anything you think that's sort of uniquely threatening to democracy here?
Well, I think it's completely uniquely threatening to democracy what's happening in Pennsylvania, because this was a completely fair election that was litigated extensively after the election. Every single court upheld the integrity of Pennsylvania's election, and now they are trying to undermine the legitimacy of the election. And I have no idea why they want such sweeping voter information from every single eligible voter in the state. You remember a few years ago, Donald Trump formed this Commission on Election Integrity, and their first act was to ask for voter data from all 50 states. And that was resoundingly rejected, including from Republican secretaries of state. I remember the Republican Secretary of State of Mississippi told them to go jump in the Gulf of Mexico. And so this was something when Republicans tried to do it nationally was extremely controversial. And I don't know why Pennsylvania wants this data, but I don't think they could use it for anything good. And remember, the chair of the committee that's doing this has refused to say that Joe Biden won the state of Pennsylvania. So this is the same kind of thing we saw in Arizona, but now they're exporting it all across the country to try to undermine the legitimacy of the 2020 election.
Are you referring to State Senator Chris Dush?
Yes.
Let me quote him and I'll toss it to you, Wendy. Ari, you were saying, you know, why would they want this? He says the reason why the Senate Intergovernmental Operations Committee subpoenaed this information is to cross match and verify whether or not our voter registration system has duplicate voters, dead voters, and or illegal voters. What do you say to that?
So this is, in fact, the job of election officials. Professionals. And what we're seeing with these partisan-led reviews, and they are not done by objective actors. They are being done principally either by partisan legislators and their committees or by major proponents of this big lie, of the Stop the Steal movement, are efforts to try to take that into partisan hands, people with not only that aren't objective, but with no election experience and no understanding of election rules and procedures in order to try to cast doubt on the legitimacy of the elections. And we just saw one of these conclude in Arizona. There was a group called Cyber Ninjas.
Over that name, to be honest with you, but nonetheless, that was their name. Let's go ahead,
that was
Wendy.
Their name, and they were, you know, both run and funded by Stop the Steal adherents, and people celebrated because they found they reaffirmed the election and Biden's win. But this actually caused tremendous damage along the way. This very non-professional so-called audit that some people are calling fraudits. It really it harmed the integrity of the voting system equipment in Arizona's largest county. They actually had to replace all of their voting equipment because they had left them in a way that they could be tampered. It cost millions of dollars. It was an engine of disinformation. They put out a whole bunch of they completely misunderstood the election process. You know, so even when they don't use it to try to overturn an election or to rally people up, they are causing huge damage to the election system along the way.
Well, and costing a lot of money in the process. Ari, let me go back to you. And my understanding here in Pennsylvania, there were almost 7 million people who voted in 2020. I believe 5 people have been identified as fraudulent voters. Interestingly, they all voted for President Trump, then President Trump. And just to go back to the 2020 election, then Attorney General Barr said it was on the up and up. As you mentioned, the courts did, state officials certified the elections. And yet here we are still fighting about an election that happened almost a year ago.
Exactly. Well, that's the entire purpose of the big lie, is to relitigate this extensively to then not just undermine the integrity of the last election, but to try to undermine future elections. And you know, if Pennsylvania had a different governor right now, if there was a Republican governor of Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania would find itself in the same situation, like Georgia, like Florida, like Texas, where they passed sweeping legislation to make it harder to vote. And the interesting thing about Pennsylvania is Republicans are angry about legislation that they signed off on. They signed off on expanding mail voting before 2020. And then they suddenly didn't like it once Donald Trump started denouncing it. But there's been no widespread or even significant evidence of voter fraud in Pennsylvania or nationally. And they are trying to undermine democracy based on nothing, based on imaginary things that they believed happened or don't even believe happened. They're just saying them to try to appease supporters of the former president. I think that Pennsylvania Republicans know full and well that Joe Biden won the election. It wasn't even particularly close in Pennsylvania. They're just saying these things to try to keep alive the big lie because they believe that that's where the Republican Party is headed under Donald Trump.
And the math doesn't add up, Ari, because if you believe the president, false claims, I should say, that there was voter fraud and that he won, but yet we're also seeing that many more Republicans here in Pennsylvania, but also across the country, did win in 2020. So were their wins fraudulent, using Trump's analogy?
Well, yeah. I mean, if Democrats wanted to rig an election, you'd think they would do better than getting a 50-50 Senate and a 5-vote majority in the House and keeping Republican-controlled states in place in pretty much every single swing state. I mean, if I was trying to rig an election, I would have a better outcome than leaving Republicans in control of Pennsylvania and Georgia and Texas and Wisconsin and all of the states that are writing key voting legislation. So, I mean, it was a very close election. It went in Joe Biden's favor at the presidential level, went in Republicans' favor in other places. It was litigated extensively. It was the most litigated election ever in American history. It was the most scrutinized election in American history, and it was judged by the Trump administration to be the most secure election in American history. And it was Republican appointed judges in many cases that oversaw the aftermath of the election and determined that there was no fraud. The election was legitimate. And ultimately, the Supreme Court allowed that to stand. And so this is just much ado about nothing. And it's just really, really crazy to me that it's October 2021 and we're still talking about what happened in 2020. And honestly, you know, we're going to be talking about it for the next 4 years. And I think that's really tragic because it's not just leading to disinformation, but it's leading to real changes that are undermining democracy every single day.
Well, in fact, let me read a question from Fran and Wendy Weiser. I'll put it to you. She says, can you talk about how in Republican-controlled states, power over state elections is being taken away from election officials and put into the hands of state legislatures? You mentioned that, but obviously, you know, Fran has some concern about that.
And I think that she has every reason to be concerned about that. One of the things that has happened this year that is new, I mean, the vote suppression, you know, we've been tracking legislation to restrict access to voting for well over a decade. And I can say that it is far worse, far more extensive, far more damaging this year than it has been in any time since we've been tracking it. But what is new this year is they've taken it one step further and are trying to put in place legislation that would enable partisans to take control of the election administration process. And in, you know, some of the legislation are so extreme that they will enable partisans to overturn election results. Those have not passed. But what we have seen pass in at least two states, the partisan legislatures, and Georgia is one of them that's gotten a lot of attention, have control and the ability to remove local election administrators that they don't like, that they think are, perhaps making it too easy to vote, and to replace them with partisans who might be more willing to undermine fair elections. In other states, and there were a number of other states, we've seen legislation that isn't as extreme as that, but that actually tries to control election officials and the election administration process in other ways, criminalizing the assistance of voters, not just by criminalizing people who assist them in lines, but criminalizing, going so far as in Texas, for example, to make it a crime for election officials to truthfully tell people about their right to apply for an absentee ballot. Yeah. I mean, it is really quite extreme the ways in which they're trying to control the election administration process. And this is something we haven't seen before.
Well, let me just add something else, and Ari, I'll toss this to you. I'm thinking of the number of election officials who have been threatened, have had to deal with things like death threats and, you know, concern about their families, that somehow their families will be hurt because of a job that they're doing on Election Day.
Yeah, this is really tragic. We've seen a huge exodus of election officials, qualified election officials, either nonpartisan election officials or respected people in both parties who have left their jobs, and they are being replaced by people who, first off, don't know what they're doing, but also they don't want to certify free and fair elections. In states like Michigan, people, Republicans who voted to certify the elections, are being replaced by Republican officials who say they won't certify the elections. Candidates for Secretary of State are running explicitly saying that they would not have certified the 2020 election. Candidates for governor. And so this is leading to a constitutional crisis where we could very well see what Donald Trump wanted in 2020, which is for Republicans not to certify the elections in future elections, either in 2022 or in 2024. And I don't think we really are understanding the magnitude of the threat, that lots of our democracy is based on democratic norms. And when those norms break down, it's very, very hard to replace that. And for many, many years, there was no question about would somebody certify an election. If someone won an election fairly, it was certified. Now we're getting to a situation where the will of the voters could be subverted and nullified if one party doesn't like the outcome. And that is incredibly dangerous for democracy.
And that is Ari Berman, who joins us along with Wendy Weiser. We're talking about the fight over the right to vote. I'm Marty Moscoen. You're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Let me read a couple of comments, and then, Wendy, I'll pick up on what Ari was just saying there. Victoria says, it's hard for me to believe that we're still debating this if 70% of people are in favor of this act. An email from Fred basically saying the Republicans have morphed into the dictatorship party. Talking about what Ari was saying and knowing what's happening on in state legislatures, or knowing that we've got, you know, elections in a couple of weeks, and also next year and beyond, and also what's happening in the U.S. Senate and also the House of Representatives. How do we hold the line against these threats against our democracy, our right to vote?
Well, it is absolutely critical that this congressional legislation pass. I do think that the crisis has reached, a crisis proportion where really only federal legislation can fix it. We have seen the courts retreat from protecting voting rights. And in many ways, actually, the Supreme Court has been an engine of rolling back voting rights, dramatically weakening the Federal Voting Rights Act, our most successful voting rights and civil rights legislation, but actually cutting back and ruling against voting rights in many, many other occasions as well. So the courts just are not equipped. They've expressly stepped away from and prohibited federal courts from stopping partisan gerrymandering, even when it offends constitutional principles. But one thing that the court has been very consistently clear on is that the Constitution gives Congress clear power to regulate federal elections and to fix this problem. In fact, the court even pointed to the predecessor legislation to the Freedom to Vote Act, the For the People Act, as an example of the exercise of congressional authority to address these threats to voting and to election integrity of the sort that the founders were thinking of. That is, in fact, why the founders put that provision in the Constitution, is to prevent states and state legislators from subverting federal elections. And so really the most important thing is to pass federal legislation now. I think it is the only and way that we're going to be able to really solve this problem and put our democracy back on track.
Well, we could go on. I wish we could. We do have to end our hour, and it's important to end on that note because I think, as you were saying, Wendy Weiser, this is such a critical issue, and we need to keep our eyes on Congress. Wendy Weiser, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. She's vice president of the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU School of Law, founded and directed the program's Voting Rights and Elections Project. Ari Berman, as always, thank you for joining us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks so much, Marty. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Senior reporter at Mother Jones, he covers voting rights, wrote a book called Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. We appreciate all those phone calls and emails that you sent to us here at WHYY and those tweets as well. You can find out more about the program. Go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times under Programs. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. The show produced by Debbie Bilder and Paige Murray-Bessler. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you for joining us.